Chapter 1. 8 years later. I'm ditching softball practice. It's not required. Not that required would make me go either. They need me to win, and as long as they need me, I'll show up when I want to. When they don't need me anymore, I'll quit. Wouldn't my father love that? He probably wouldn't even notice, truthfully. My dad hasn't watched me throw a ball since I was 9. My life was moving in one direction. The perfect postcard family. Smiles always on our faces. Food on our table, holidays, vacations, and all that happy home shit. Then my mom left in the middle of the night after my dad crashed his car into the one owned by the guy she was having an affair with. Seems dad wasn't supposed to be home that early. And catch her packing her things to escape with some dude named Kevin who was 8 years younger than she. My dad was gone when she finally left, drowning all his problems in a bottle of Jack at some seedy hole-in-the-wall bar in Southside. I didn't really know what was happening then. I just knew that I had to spend the summer with my grandparents in Fresno while my parents worked things out. Turns out, working things out meant my mom disappeared completely. I'm not sure what hurt more, the fact that she didn't say goodbye to me, or that she didn't want to take me with her, wherever it was she went. I hate her for leaving, but I hate my dad even more for not being there to stop her. He's never been the same. Checked out. Except for the 3 months of baseball he coaches every spring. He treats the guys on his team like sons. Me? I'm the roommate that sometimes he bothers to lecture when he's pissed off about life or needs someone to pass it off on. I get the man who stumbles in late at night after the bar, sloppy and blubbering about how sorry he is. He's only sorry when he's drunk. He only makes promises about being a better dad when he's wasted. His promises are made in slurs. Other times, he's just mean. The angry drunk, who says truths that I know live somewhere deep inside. In the morning, I go right back into that box he keeps me in, the one that's labeled, "Do not touch," more like, "Do not love." When I turn 18, he won't have that luxury anymore. He'll have to start taking his problems out on someone else. Maybe he can turn on himself. Though, I guess he does that already too. Whatever. It's the last day of winter break, and I'm waiting for Taryn at the junior high baseball fields. She's skipping softball practice too. This week was just tryouts for the newbies. Coach knows what I can do, and Taryn doesn't get to play much anyway. It's our last day of freedom before we go back into the chaos of South High. I can't miss any more days of school this year. Dad got a letter. I got a lecture. I rolled my eyes at first, but then he said he'd transfer me to Cardin if he had to. That's where they send the fuck-ups. And as fucked up as I am, I don't belong at Cardin. A white truck pulls up along the opposite end of the field, kicking up dust from the dirt road. It's hard to tell from here, but it looks like 3 guys my age are getting out. I don't recognize them, and I wonder if they're here to do a deal. That happens here sometimes. Dealers figure the junior high is the last place cops will look. The fields are hard to get to, so a patrol car would be totally oblivious. Maybe that's why I wanted to come here. My phone buzzes in my pocket, so I slide it into my hand so I can keep an eye on the boys in the truck while I answer Taryn's text. Taryn.
Almost there. My lighter's jacked. I had to buy a new one.
Me. Okay. 3 dudes just pulled up in a truck. Maybe they have some stuff. I don't hit the hard stuff, but sometimes I like to smoke a joint or take pills like Vicks or OC. I tried Spice at the last party Taryn and I went to, but it made me super paranoid. I don't need to add to my anxiety. I need to escape it. I don't think I'll be getting anything from these dudes, though. They're pulling bats out of the back of the truck and a bucket of balls, which means they're probably coming over here. Ah, shit. My phone vibrates again against my leg with another text. Taryn.
I don't want any shit today, but are they cute?
I laugh softly. pressing the edge of my phone to my lips as I glance up at the three figures walking towards me. The one in the middle is the tallest, and he's wearing a dark blue sweatshirt and black shorts. It's hard to tell from here, but his hair looks like it's light brown, maybe a little long. It sticks out from the sides of his hat. The other two are wearing gray sweatpants and black t-shirts, and the one on the right is African-American. They don't look familiar, and I wonder if they go to North. Me. Can't tell yet, but looks promising. She sends me back the thumbs-up emoticon and says she's 2 minutes away. I push my phone into my back pocket and twist the cap from my water bottle to take a drink, giving me a good cover to stare at my approaching company a little longer. The wind is picking up, so I take the hair tie from my wrist and pull my hair back in a ponytail, then pull the sleeves of my flannel shirt into my palms to keep my hands warm. It doesn't really get cold in Bakersfield, but in January, with the wind, the 60 degrees feels colder than normal. I can tell the guys are talking about me as they cross into the infield area and step up on the mound, setting the bucket down and dropping their bats in the grass. The tall one pulls his hat from his head and smooths his hair back before sliding his hat on backward. He looks right at me when he does, and I dare myself not to look away or change my expression for his benefit at all, even though his blue eyes are freaking unbelievable. He's unbelievable. He pushes up his sleeves and stretches one arm over his chest as he talks to his two friends, but he keeps glancing at me between his words. I don't give in, and I watch him the entire time. I won't smile. He doesn't. We're both being stubborn. It's like I'm invisible, and he doesn't even acknowledge the fact that he's looking at me. His expression is blank.
What'd I miss?
Taryn asks, sliding in next to me on the bleachers. She hands me her lighter, and I grab it without looking away. Nothing, I say. They just got here. They parked over there. I nod across the field to their truck, my eyes still on him as he bends down for a ball, swinging his arm around a few times in the throwing motion to warm up, still looking at me.
Huh,
Taryn responds. Well, at least they're cute. Yeah, they're cute. The shortest one seems to have the biggest arms, his biceps completely filling the sleeves of his shirt. He's blonde, I think. I don't look at him long because I don't want to lose this staring contest with Mr. Backward Hat. I was right about the other guy being African-American, and Taryn claims him as hers the second he pushes up the legs of his sweatpants, revealing the dark, strong muscles of his calves, while he takes a bat in his hands and swings it side to side. Damn, girl. I hope he's new. I'm totally getting on that welcoming committee, she says, her eyes locked on his broad-shouldered figure, the bat now stretched across his back. I don't speak, instead bringing my fist up to my mouth, my elbow rested on my knee while I chew at my knuckle and concentrate on the boy on the mound. He quit looking at me when his friend crouched behind the plate, pounding his glove for a few warm-up throws. Now that he's not watching me, I can study him more closely. He tosses the ball up a few times in his bare hand, then readies himself along the rubber on the mound, kicking his foot in a few times to loosen up the hard dirt. The junior high school field is old and small. So, they've used one of the bucket lids as home plate, moving it back a good 15 feet from where the younger kid's one is. Finally satisfied with the ground under him, the pitcher stands perfectly still for a few seconds before stepping into his wind-up motion, his arm taking a long path from far behind his head and around his body, the ball hitting the glove with a crisp snap.
Shoot! Taryn hums next to me. That was fast.
Yeah, I say, my lips still pressed along my knuckles. I'm grinning against my hand, but I don't want anyone to see that I'm impressed. Not Taryn, and not the guy throwing the ball. He repeats his motion 6 or 7 times before his friend finally steps up to the plate. There's no way in hell he's hitting him. I lean back, letting my legs drape forward along the bleachers, the shoestrings from my Vans dangling along the sides, my skinny jeans hugging my ankles over my socks. I click the lighter a few times in my palm next to me, holding the flame on until I feel the heat as I watch Hat Boy pull up his knee and stretch the length of the mound, firing off a pitch a good 10 miles per hour faster than his warm-up throws. His friend swings and misses.
"Jesus," Taryn says, leaning back next to me.
She hands me a cigarette, but I shake my head. I don't feel like smoking. I hand her the lighter and she puts hers up to her lips, burning the tip and puffing once while we watch the catcher throw the ball back to Hat Boy, who shakes out his arm and lines himself up on the rubber again.
"So, that's how it's gonna be, huh?"
the batter says, shrugging his shoulders a few times and tapping the bat against the edge of the plate. The catcher chuckles, mumbling something that makes them all laugh, and I wish I could hear whatever it was he said, because Hat Boy is leaning forward now, looking in for a sign with one side of his lip raised in the cockiest fucking smile I've ever seen. I was smitten with his eyes. They're pretty to look at, a unique blue, bright enough that I can tell their color from 50 feet away. His smile, though. Well, as Taryn said, Jesus. He pulls his arms together and presents for his next pitch, and I sit forward again, watching the details of his movement. He turns the ball in his glove, the lines of muscles along his forearms ticking with each twist until his fingers are gripping the ball just right. He's going to throw a curve. As the ball releases, I stand and jump down over the two rows of bleachers to the ground, walking closer to the backstop while his friend swings and misses again, the curve sailing low and away. He never had a chance.
That fucking dickhead,
his friend who's batting mutters through a laugh to the catcher. The blonde guy scoops the ball low, throws it back to Hat Boy, then pounds his fist in his glove to knock away the dirt.
It was a good pitch, man. Good swing. He just got you, that's all,
he says, tapping his glove on his friend's leg.
You call that pitch? The batter asks.
Nah, man, you know better than that. He never throws what I call. That was all him, he says,
pounding his glove one more time and adjusting his body on his heels.
Come on, Dub, give him something to hit.
The pitcher adjusts his hat again, pulling it forward now, low on his brow. The brim casts a dark shadow that obliterates the blue in his eyes. I hate that I can't see his eyes. It makes me feel uneasy. He runs the side of his arm along his brow before twisting his neck, the same smirk from before the curveball sliding across his lips. I watch him pull his hands together and work the ball in his glove, his lip ticking just a hint higher when he settles on his grip.
Watch for the changeup, I say,
my fingers now curled through the chain link and my forehead resting against the backstop. The batter glances at me quickly, his brow low.
He makes the typical, who the fuck are you, face.
Then he turns back toward Hat Boy, digging his feet into the batter's box a little harder and tisking at my suggestion as he rolls his shoulders. His leg is twitching to step already, and his bat is wiggling up and down his shoulder. He's going to miss. Hat Boy winds up the same way he did the first two times. His body is impressive. Not just in a hot guy sort of way, but like an athlete. My father would love him. His control is ridiculous, and he wears the game face my dad's always telling the guys to have. Intimidation, he says, is 50% of the game. For me, it's always been 90%.
If I were to overlap videos of all three pitches,
his release point would be exactly the same. His gift, though, is his ability to make the ball move anywhere he wants it to, at any speed. The batter anticipates, just like I knew he would, and his swing is done by the time the ball sails by, landing softly in the catcher's mitt. That was at least 15 slower, I whispered to myself. The batter hears me, though, and looks up with one eyebrow cocked.
Dude, Wes, that was killer. Throw it again, man. Loving it,
Loving it, the catcher says, pulling his mask off and tossing it to the ground. He throws the ball back to the pitcher. His name is Wes. Hold up, the batter says, flashing a hand to Wes and the catcher. He walks over to me and I feel my stomach clench. I used to think I hated confrontation. I don't. I love it. And I'm good at it. I wear my game face. You were early, I shrug, one lip pulling up to the side as I kick the toe of my shoe into the bottom of the backstop. I feel Taryn walk up next to me. She drops her cigarette in the dirt, stepping on it to put it out before grabbing hold of the fence too. You called a changeup, the guy says, his mouth a hard line and his eyes looking at me with suspicion. He thinks I made a lucky guess, and he's a little pissed I made fun of him. I probably shouldn't have, but there's something about these three that makes me want to bring out my snarky side. Yep, I say, leaning away from the fence while holding on, stretching my arms. I glance at Wes over his shoulder, his hat still low over his eyes. He's looking at me, his weight leaning on one leg, his glove propped against the hip of the other. Want me to show you how to hit it? The catcher starts to laugh behind him, his hand balled in a fist over his mouth. Damn, she just called you out, TK, he says. TK swings his bat around his body, sliding it through his hand and holding the grip side out. His lip pursed and his eyebrows raised in expectation. I chuckle to myself and look down, shaking my head. Oh, you don't really want to show me, is that it? He taunts, holding his other hand out to the side as he takes slow strides backward towards the makeshift home plate. Don't be an asshole, TK. She was just being nice, the catcher says. I like that he's sticking up for me, but he's wrong. I wasn't being nice. I was calling TK out on his weaknesses. I glance to Taryn, who knows I'm not leaving here without sending the ball back at the pitcher's knees. She laughs quietly, then moves to the front level of the bleachers a few feet behind us, as I step around the backstop, my hand dragging along the fence until I reach the end. I stop before the dirt, bending down to tie my shoes, then pull my flannel shirt from my arms, tying it around my waist. I wore my black tank top with a thin rose painted down the middle, and my arms chill from the wind. I can't swing in anything clingy, though, so I rub both of my arms a few times before reaching out for his bat. TK, I say his name, taking the heavy bat from his hands. I flip it around to read the numbers. It's a few ounces heavier than I'm used to. I tap the barrel against the bottom of my shoe a few times, then close one eye as I look back up to my sparring partner. So does that stand for technical knockout? He laughs once through his closed mouth, the sound rumbling from his chest. I smile at the sound because he reminds me of Connor, except Connor's laughter bellows, because he's about 200 pounds of mom's pies and cookies. TK is 200 pounds of Mack truck. No, that would be TKO, Cherry, and no, it stands for Thomas Kennedy, he nods. Cherry, I scowl, slapping the bat in my hand like I'm tougher than I actually am. Yeah, your cheeks are all red and round. They look like cherries. The same laugh mixes with his words. I join in, looking over at my friend now sitting in the center of the bleachers, her legs folded up underneath her. She shakes her head, because she knows me. I don't do nicknames, especially not ones like Cherry. Ah, I see, I say, stepping up to the plate. Wes shuffles his feet around the rubber on the mound. Up this close, I can see his eyes under the shadow of his hat, and I catch him rolling them, his mouth a hard line. He's not amused, and he thinks this is a waste of time. Huh, I thought Cherry was a commentary on my virginity, I say, steadying my feet into place as I swing the bat around twice before resting it on my shoulder. I feel them all freeze at the mention of the word virginity. If that were the case, TK, I ain't no Cherry. The blonde guy starts coughing to cover his shocked laugh. TK and Wes remain silent, TK running his hand over his mouth while Wes's jaw flexes and his tight mouth bends into disapproval.
Fuck him. Now I really am going to take out his kneecaps. You gonna pitch, or you wanna stand there a little while longer and judge me?
Taryn whistles softly behind me, and TK chuckles while he takes a step back.
All right, Wes, let's see what she's got,
the catcher says, crouching down and patting his glove a few times. Wes turns his head, tucking his chin into his shoulder, working the ball in his fingers against his thigh. His lips part, and he says something to himself. I can't hear him, but I'm pretty sure he didn't say anything nice. I dig my foot in while he shifts his body, readying for the throw.
Show him how it's done, Cherry,
Taryn chants from behind the backstop. I pull my hand from the bat and flip her off. It only makes her laugh again. I'm sure she's giving me the finger back, but I don't bother to look. Wes shakes his hand by his side, then brings the ball into his glove. His eyes lazily looking at the plate as he cocks back and tosses the ball with an arc to the catcher. I drop the bat and snag it before it hits his glove. Don't, I say, shaking my head at him. I fire the ball back, hoping the sting of it punctuates my point. He lets the ball sit in his glove in front of him, his eyes squinting at mine, his jaw working while he chews at the inside of his mouth. Don't treat me like I'm not just as good as you. My cheeks burn a little. I'm letting him piss me off, and that pisses me off. I swing the bat around again and rest it on my shoulder, twisting my back foot into the dirt. He tosses the ball in his hand a few times, then steps back to the mound, repeating the same presentation as before, never once adjusting his grip or moving the ball in his hand. He's gonna throw me the heat. Good. His windup is the same, his motion the same, and I arm my muscles early, knowing I'll have to swing fast. My bat is at the plate the second the ball is, and I foul it off behind me over the fence, into the dirt lot overrun with weeds.
You're finding that, TK says. Whatever,
I answer, nodding for Wes to pitch me another. He bends down and grabs another ball from the bucket behind him, rubbing it on his shorts a few times, his thumb twisting it in his hand until his fingers have all found a seam. He doesn't adjust again, and I know he's going to try to catch me off balance. Wes winds up, and everything in my world slows down. I hear my own breath stop. I see the way his sweatshirt rides up around his waist. I notice how low his shorts rest on his hips and how absolutely touchable his stomach is. His mouth gets tight, his face showing the restraint he's putting into every frame of his movement, and his eyes look driven. When the ball releases, I watch the rotation, sitting back just long enough to step with the pitch and send the ball to the fence down the third base line. I didn't hit it at him like I wanted to, but I hit it hard. I made my point, and the fact that he's resting his glove and throwing a hand on his head, watching my ball bounce to a stop about 300 feet out, leaves me more satisfied than any high.
I'm Levi Stokes, and I think I want to marry you, the catcher says, taking the bat from my hand.
I laugh lightly, unable to stop my smile at his over-the-top line. It's sweet, and while most girls would probably swoon over a guy that looks like him, blonde hair, green eyes, muscular build, Levi Stokes is not my type. I don't want a type, really, but I also know I have one. And Wes? He's pretty much the paint-by-numbers version of my greatest crush weaknesses. Thanks, Levi, I say, glancing to the mound where Wes is now pacing, tossing a ball bored with me already. His indifference stings, and I hate that I care.
But I don't want to have to take care of a man all my life.
I add this just to get a reaction. It catches Wes's attention, and he takes a few steps closer.
Marriage is shit. No offense. You can give me and my girl here a ride home, though.
Deal, Levi says, reaching out his hand for me to shake. I take it, and his grip is hard, masculine.
Damn, Cherry, that shit was tight,
TK says, holding out his knuckles for me. I smirk at his hand and pound my fist lightly into his.
Thanks, knockout,
I wink.
And you can call me Joss. I don't know, you're pretty sweet, like a cherry, He laughs. If you call me Cherry again, I'll punch you, I say quickly. He shakes his head with a chuckle, holding up a hand to point at me.
Okay, Joss, Joss the boss, he winks.
I roll my eyes, but when I turn around, I smile because boss is a whole lot better than Cherry.
We're just going to hit a few more. You girls okay sticking around?
Levi asks.
Fine by us, I say,
rounding the fence and sitting on the bottom bleacher next to my friend.
We'll just wait here so we can, give you more pointers? Ha, teach me anything you want, boss,
TK says, stepping back into the box. I stand to untie my flannel from around my waist, slotting my arms through again. I let the sleeves drape on me, though, letting one fall off my shoulder enough that it exposes my bare skin and the black strap of my tank top. Levi looks at it and licks his lips before sliding his mask over his face and kneeling down next to TK. He's so easy. He's also not the reason I did it. Wes is wearing his hat low again, and he reaches up to adjust it before digging his foot into the mound. He's counting on the shadow of his brim to mask him, but it's not dark enough. I can still see his eyes, and they're on me. I let my lip curl on one side and I tug my hair loose from the ponytail before I sit down to watch, my blonde strands twisting and nodding in the breeze. I sweep my hair over my other shoulder, happy that Wes is watching every movement, and between each pitch, those eyes, they always come back to me. The boys hit for about a half an hour while Taryn and I both smoke a cigarette. I'm stomping mine out when TK hops back over the fence from grabbing the ball I fouled off into the field. He steps up next to me, nudging me with the bucket of balls.
That's bad for you, you know. You should quit, he says,
nodding towards the butt on the ground.
Yeah, well, I've got a long list of shit I should quit, TK. Trust me when I say smoking every now and then is the least of my problems.
I smile at him after I talk. I think I'm clever, but he doesn't look amused. It makes me a little uncomfortable. I look away quickly, bending down to pick up the smooshed cigarette end. I may have a laundry list of bad habits, but littering isn't one of them. I carry it in my palm to the trash at the end of the dugout, then fall into step alongside TK, Taryn on my other side. Levi and Wes walk several steps in front of us. Levi looks over his shoulder a few times. Wes only picks up his pace, like he can't drop Taryn and me off fast enough.
So, boss, TK says.
I sigh, but I give in to the smile. I hate to admit it, but I kind of like this new nickname. I think I also like that he's moved on from my smoking and other flaws.
That's some swing, he says,
gesturing towards the field behind us with his neck.
You play, right?
Before I can answer, Taryn snickers. I roll my eyes and push her off balance, making her stumble a few steps.
Joss Winters is the best shortstop in California,
she blurts out, sticking her tongue out at me as she takes a step to the side so I can't hit her again.
Ah, I don't know about that, TK says. I'm pretty sure I'm the best shortstop in California.
I look down at my feet and let my smile crease my cheeks before I pull my phone from my pocket and pretend I'm getting a call.
What? Who are you looking for?
TK? I say to my fake caller. I hold the device in my hand to face him, and he pinches his brow.
Hey, it's the president. He wants you to know that you're actually number two now.
It takes a few seconds for TK to let his laughter break through, but when he does, it's easy and comforting. I like that I can tease him.
You all go to North?
Taryn asks. I can tell TK's answer is the one she really cares about. She's never been good at hiding her emotions, and she bites her bottom lip now like a child asking Santa for the latest hot toy.
We start at South on Monday. Just moved here,
TK answers. Taryn nods, her eyes flashing a hell yeah to mine in a split second. I think about his words for a few seconds, glancing up at the rest of the we walking in front of us.
You all just moved here?
I let my question slip out slowly, noticing Wes doesn't pause or even seem to acknowledge my question at all. I'm starting to get the sense that he's not real thrilled about giving us a ride home.
Yep,
Levi says, spinning around and walking backward for a few steps.
We're brothers.
I nod, sucking my lip tightly while I do my best to attempt to understand how they all fit together without asking.
You're seniors?
I settle on nailing down their ages first.
Close, Cherry.
Oh, TK starts, stopping his slip-up mid-word, shaking his head and chuckling to himself.
Damn, that became a habit fast.
I meant boss. And no, we're juniors.
You?
Me and Taryn are too, I say, tugging my shirt snug to my body as the sun starts to set. The wind is picking up some. We're getting closer to the truck, and Wes hasn't said a word. I'm not even sure he actually speaks. He reaches the locked gate first, stepping up easily and placing one foot on the chain while he swings his body over to the other side. He turns his hat backward before reaching to the top of the fence to take the bucket of balls from Levi. But just before the exchange, his eyes move to mine. It's such a small glance, and I'm right in front of him. There really wasn't anywhere else for his gaze to land. But somehow, it also feels choreographed, as if he'd been working this trip out several steps ahead of the rest of us, just so he'd have this chance to silently confront me, study me, and look at me like this through a thin layer of chain link, close enough to touch if it weren't for the metal barrier between us. My stomach knots, and I feel uneasy under his scrutiny. It feels like a warning. This is unfair coming from eyes like that.
Hey, wait,
Levi says after passing the bucket over. Wes turns away the second Levi speaks, and I give him all of my attention, my eyes wide, and my lips sealed.
You're not related to Eric Winters, are you?
I squeeze at my sleeve, which is now bunched in my palm, and wrap my knuckles against my thigh, as my teeth clench and my lips force out a smile. It's not Levi's fault he's so enthusiastic about my connection to Coach Winters. He plays baseball, and my father will love him. He'll love all three of them, actually. And Eric Winters is a big deal when it comes to California baseball. 7 state titles, 40-plus college players, and a dozen drafted into the majors. Unfortunately, his statistics in the father department suck ass.
That's why you were so good,
he says, taking a step back, as if he's surprised. I try to remind myself that his reaction isn't his fault. It's normal. The same assumption everyone makes. It still irks me, and my mind still runs through the same sarcastic response I usually give. Yes, this is the secret to my success, Levi. You've pieced it together. I have spectacular genes when it comes to running bases and throwing a ball. No effort of my own went into my talent on my part whatsoever. Or maybe she just practices harder than you do. Wes's voice breaks through my inner dialogue. He rolls his eyes at Levi, taking the bats through the fence as he defends me without my asking, without knowing he should. His eyes graze over mine again as he turns, pausing for a beat, long enough that I feel it and blink. He was giving his brother shit, mostly, but he's also saying what I wouldn't. Thanks. The word passes through my head, through my chest, but then the second he turns and steps to the truck, it's gone.
Right, no, I didn't mean that. I only meant that's cool and all, you know, your dad.
Levi stutters, glancing to me before climbing over the fence, focusing on his hands and feet. I see him shake his head to admonish himself. He's embarrassed.
I know what you meant. Yeah, it's, cool,
I guess, I say, looking to Taryn before fitting my shoes into the fence holes so I can climb. She holds her mouth in a tight line in response, because she's been with me through it all, and she knows my father's failures all too well. No sense in tearing him down in front of these three, though. We all clear the fence and Wes secures the equipment against the cab in the back of the truck. Levi and TK jump in the back, insisting Taryn and I sit up front. I climb in reluctantly, not wanting to sit so close to Wes, but Taryn doesn't follow. I should have known she wants to ride in the back near TK. I'm going to be in here with him, Mr. Talkative, completely alone. I guess I can fill most of the time with directions to my house. I scoot closer to the door and pull it shut before reaching for the seatbelt. I hear Wes's door close, but I don't look at him. On instinct, I start to hold my breath, like I'm in the middle of some dare being trapped in a box. A box with a boy that I can't deny is hot, if not for his personality shortcomings. The seatbelt won't click, and I can feel my lungs starting to ache from the lack of breath. And the more I fumble with the metal clip and the buckle, the more panic seeps through my veins and starts to take over my muscle control. Wes clears his throat before sliding his hand along the seat towards my failed attempts, and my eyes widen at the sight of his fingertips moving closer to mine. I let go of the belt completely, but before it has a chance to retract and slide back over my body, Wes catches it. My eyes dart to his, and he holds onto our stair while he easily clicks my buckle in place. "You were putting it in on the wrong side," he says, the edge of his mouth lifting briefly. It makes a temporary dimple on his cheek, and my eyes zero in on that while it's there. "Oh, thanks," I say. My hands tingle with the shot of adrenaline I feel from talking with him, this close, alone. I curl my hands tightly and bring them in my lap to rid myself of the sensation. I don't like it. It's out of my control. He pulls his belt over his chest, then turns the key, the truck shaking a little with its effort to start. That one small fraction of a smile and those few words are all I'm going to get. He's focused completely on his mirrors and the dirt road ahead now. I pull my sleeves over my hands again, looking at my short, ripped fingernails. I spare a glance to my left and notice Wes's eyes on my hands, so I pull my sleeve ends completely over them before tucking my hands under my thighs. His eyes move back to the road when I do. "So, you, TK, and Levi, you're, brothers?" My heart pounds a little harder in my chest. I'm not good with new people. I usually either avoid them or dominate them from the beginning, figuring they'll either bow to my aggressive style or steer clear of me. But Wes intimidates me more than most. I don't like that. Wes doesn't respond verbally, instead looking at me to make sure my eyes are on him when he nods. "Cool," I say, immediately feeling stupid for having asked the question. The quiet takes over quickly on our side of the glass, while the two boys in the back with Taryn are laughing loudly, talking happily, smiling. Nothing but serious tolerance going on in here. "Which one of you, I start. But stop. My mouth not sure of the right way to form the words dashing around my head. I don't know why I'm compelled to talk to him. I don't even know why I really care. Other than the fact that I now know I'm going to see him at school, probably more given his skill and my father's love of pitchers just like him. He'll be my dad's new favorite. I pull the lighter from my shirt pocket and run my fingers over the switch a few times, a nervous habit I picked up. Sometimes I crave having something to hold and touch more than the actual drag of a cigarette. Who's adopted? Just TK or... you? The three of them look nothing alike. TK's skin a deep brown, Levi's pale and freckled, and Wes somewhere in between. The truck stops slowly at the edge of the dirt road, and Wes leans forward, looking both ways and squinting into the setting sun. The light plays off the ends of his hair sticking out of the back and sides of his hat, turning the strands gold. "We all are," he says, his answer short. A semi passes in front of us and Wes turns left onto the highway. I open my mouth to start giving him directions, but he interrupts me, glancing down to my lap where my finger is still nervously clicking the lighter. "You smoke?" he asks. He knows I do. This feels like a trick. "Sometimes," I answer, not wanting to give him any more or any less, but inside my voice keeps going. "Sometimes I do a lot of things, and nobody has given a shit for years, so don't pretend you do." Part of me is tempted to light a cigarette now, just to see how he'd react. I don't, though. Instead, I slide the lighter back into my front pocket and push my hands back under my thighs, turning my attention to the rows of houses streaming by outside my window. I lived with a foster family when I was young. The mom smoked a lot. She died of a heart attack at, like, 40, he says, his lips parting to say more. A breath escapes, the kind that someone takes before they speak, a courage kind of breath. But his lips close just as quickly, and he glances over his opposite shoulder, switching lanes. Yeah, well, like I said, I only smoke sometimes, I say. He didn't tell me to stop. He didn't say it was bad for me. He just smacked me with a small dose of guilt. Asshole. We reach the light for our neighborhood street, and I sit up, readying myself to tell him where to turn. But he pushes the blinker and moves into the left lane on his own, so I stop myself. How the hell does he know where I live? The laughter in the back of the truck kicks in again, and I let the sound fill the small void. As he turns at the arrow and maneuvers through the narrow street and cars all parked along the curb. So, you're all... Stokes? I ask, my eyes keeping a suspicious hold on him as he glances up in the rearview mirror. The small dimple comes again before he speaks, and the sight of it makes my heart beat harder for that second. Yeah, 3 mix-and-match triplets, he says, making the slight turn towards my house. I lower my eyes and twist my head forward to peer out the front window before looking back to him. Taryn's voice is faint through the glass behind me, and I hear the 2 guys laugh along with her again. Maybe she gave him our address while I was busy untangling my hands from the seatbelt? I'm the 3rd one on the left, I say, my eyes not leaving his face. His jaw twitches, but he nods slowly at my direction. Shit, maybe he's a creeper. He's a hot creeper, but a total creeper. I move my hand to my seat buckle, and the second he pulls up to my house, I unfasten my belt and flip open my door. Wes doesn't leave the driver's seat. Taryn and I say goodbye to Levi and TK and wait at the edge of my dirt front yard while they climb into the cab with Wes. Did you give him directions too? I ask Taryn, for some reason not wanting to admit I didn't tell him where to go. I don't want my best friend freaking out over this. It's probably nothing, but then it also feels like something. At least something I should pay attention to.
No, you know I suck at that. I figured you had it handled. Why, did he get lost?
She asks, glancing at me but only for a second before smiling and waving to TK. A little, I lie, pinning my lower lip in my teeth and holding my breath. My thoughts race in search of any reason Wes Stokes should know where I live. And just before he pulls away, he looks at me through his window, his blue eyes locking on mine, and there's a flash of a much younger face behind them for the briefest moment when he blinks. The familiar feeling is gone quickly, but it leaves a trace of something behind. A memory. Wes Stokes has been here before. My chest constricts as I glance to the place in my front lawn a few yards behind me, the place where a boy once saved my life. And I live in that memory for a few long seconds before shelving it again, burying it back under everything I've promised myself to forget.